Today, we now have Prime Minister Boris Johnson. But what's his plan for Brexit, and will it stand up to reality? And, not related, I promise, Rebecca Nicholson on what gets people laughing.
Thank you very much. Good morning, everybody. Thank you.
It's really happening.
Thank you, everybody. And we know the mantra: deliver Brexit, unite the country, and defeat Jeremy Corbyn. And that is what we're going to do.
Boris Johnson, the next Prime Minister, standing in front of the Tory faithful with his mop of blonde hair and all the bluster and bombast we've come to expect.
Deliver, unite, and defeat was not the perfect acronym for an election campaign, since unfortunately it spells dud. But they forgot the final E, my friends. E for energise. And I say to all the doubters, dude, we are going to energise the country. We're going to get Brexit done.
It shouldn't be a surprise by now. As one advisor recently said to me, Boris Johnson is an itch that the Conservative Party just needs to scratch. But they know that he inherits all the same problems that brought down Theresa May.
And if I could make one plea as a backbencher, can we be kinder to the next Prime Minister than we've been to the current Prime Minister?
I find it amazing that Boris apparently hasn't got any furniture, so they're going to have to provide furniture. But the one thing they won't have to provide him with is knives, because he'll be going in there tomorrow, if my prediction's right, with at least half a dozen knives already in his back.
Getting to Downing Street was a lifelong ambition for Johnson, but it won't be easy. Not least because of his central campaign promise to get Britain out of the EU in fewer than 100 days, do or die. From The Guardian, I'm Anoushka Astana. Today in Focus, is Prime Minister Johnson leading the UK to a no-deal Brexit? Rowena Mason, you've been watching all of this as The Guardian's deputy political editor. As we sit here, Boris Johnson hasn't yet made his big appointments. I'm sure the papers will be full of speculation. But we do know that straight away he's facing a number of ministerial resignations.
That's right. Yes, a few cabinet ministers who have absolutely set their face against a no-deal Brexit. Now, there's an element of them jumping before they're pushed here. People like Philip Hammond, the Chancellor.
Question by saying, as Chancellor,
indeed.
Do you think you're going to be sacked?
No, I'm sure I'm not going to be sacked because I'm going to resign before we get to that point. I intend...
Really? And David Gawk, assuming, the Justice Secretary, couldn't possibly have hoped to stay on in a Boris Johnson cabinet, having been very rude about his Brexit plans already. But one consequence of that is that it means Boris Johnson's going to have to get on with a reshuffle fairly quickly. He's going to have to appoint new people to those top jobs, especially the chancellorship, because that could give the markets some jitters if he doesn't put somebody in place straight away. And then the other thing that he'll be turning his mind to is the parliamentary challenges potentially on Thursday. Could there be a confidence vote in his premiership straight away? It's looking unlikely at this point because Conservative MPs probably want to give him a chance. But he can't be complacent about it. There could be a move against him.
Yeah, and I'm not sure that Boris Johnson's going to be listening to this, looking for our advice when he goes for his reshuffle. But having seen quite a few reshuffles, I think the general bit of advice is sack too many people at your peril. Now, he wants Brexit do or die by October the 31st.
On October the
31st.
31st, correct.
Come what may.
Come what may.
Do or die.
Come what may. Do or die. Come what may.
How's he going to do that?
It's not clear to anybody at the moment. You talk to Conservative MPs and they sort of say, oh, well, we hope he's got a plan. We don't really know what it is if he does have one. His stated public plan is that he's ditching Theresa May's withdrawal deal.
Well, I think that the withdrawal agreement as it currently stands is a dead letter.
He's said the backstop is completely dead.
They need to take the 175 pages of the Irish backstop and they need basically to remit it, to remove it, to delete it.
He's going to try and pass a series of side deals on issues such as EU citizens, which he says Europe can't possibly disagree with.
Just because that's the right thing to do. They've done it. They contribute to our society. They're law-abiding people, by and large, and they deserve that protection.
And he's looking for a totally fresh deal with the EU by October the 31st, which seems extremely unlikely. It seems very, very difficult to get something to start from scratch and get a whole new deal within that time frame. So some sceptical people think he might just almost rebadge Theresa May's deal with a few tweaks here and there, even though that would be very difficult for some of the Eurosceptics on his team to swallow. And if that doesn't happen, if Brussels comes out straight away and says it's not willing to budge on almost anything, then it does look like we're heading for a no-deal Brexit and an almighty battle with Parliament.
Daniel Boffey, you're our man in Brussels. You're watching all this from the EU perspective. It sounds like we could be steamrolling ahead to no deal. I mean, what is the reaction in the EU?
I think that was the growing fear. I mean, Boris Johnson brings more baggage in terms of Brussels than any other Prime Minister, British Prime Minister we had. I mean, they know him so well from being a Brussels correspondent for the Daily Telegraph, from being the Vote Leave head honcho. And I think, yeah, there was this sense, growing sense, ominous sense that Boris Johnson had really no interest in renegotiating. But I tell you what, it really did all change last week. When Parliament decided to instruct the government to keep on coming back in September, October.
The ayes to the right, 315. The noes to the left, 274.
As a way to stop Boris Johnson from proroguing Parliament. That indicated to people in the European Commission and key member states that for all that Boris might have wanted to go for a no deal, that he's not going to be able to. There has been a change in the last week, just because I think Boris Johnson's manoeuvre space has been crunched down a bit.
Right, so the EU have interpreted that vote as being really significant. We'll talk later about whether it really is. But the reason we're focusing so much on no deal is because Boris Johnson has hardened his position on Brexit. He says the withdrawal agreement is dead and now that he won't even try to negotiate a time limit on the backstop. Isn't it inevitable that he's saying that because the EU won't change its position on either of those points?
Yeah, no, I think it is inevitable. I think it was this is always the way this leadership contest was going to go. It was almost pushed that way, although I'm not quite sure I understand why a unilateral exit mechanism from the backstop would be something he wouldn't want. I mean, that's perfect, surely. But he's the rhetoric was only going one way, and it seemed destined to go only one way. But the EU side are not convinced that he can do it. He will actually be able to physically take the UK out on the 31st of October. And there's plenty of no deal legislation they'll have to get through Parliament, and that might provide an opportunity to block an opportunity to block which doesn't involve a vote of confidence. So again, I say the EU are feeling relatively confident that Boris will not succeed if that is what he wants to do.
Boris Johnson has told his supporters that even if we are at no deal on October the 31st, we can just sail onto a standstill transition where no one pays tariffs because of a clause in international trade law.
As we come out to agree under GATT 24 paragraph 5b that both sides agree to a standstill, a protraction of their existing zero tariff.
But he's sort of been brilliantly pulled up on that by the BBC's Andrew Neil.
How would you handle paragraph 5c?
I would confide entirely in paragraph 5b, because that is...
How would you get round what's in 5c?
I would confide entirely in paragraph 5b, which is enough for our purposes. No.
The problem for Johnson is the EU has to agree to that sort of standstill, and there's no suggestion that it would. But could they grant some sort of extension?
I don't know the detail of what Boris is seeking, because it doesn't make any sense. But what the EU are looking for is basically, they'll call it another extension of Article 50, but they'll call it maybe a no-deal extension to give Boris some cover. And his Brexiteers can say, oh, well, we're just sort of dealing with the last final preparations for leaving, crashing out without a withdrawal agreement. But meanwhile, you know, some real negotiation can go on and a fix can be found. That's the idea. I mean, it might be pie in the sky. I mean, what is the fix?
What is the fix, Daniel? You should know that. What is it?
I think others involved in the negotiation should know that. But that's reporting.
You're
just
our
reporting.
Expert. Is there a fix that can satisfy both Boris Johnson and the EU?
Not if you take Boris Johnson's words at face value, no. If you're thinking rationally, if Boris Johnson was like, well, actually, you know, I'm going to deliver something which ensure the backstop is going to it was not going to last forever. And you've got this, which has got times in it and a timeline for getting rid of it all. You know, that sounds quite good. And you can imagine maybe Boris Johnson might be able to win over more MPs in the Commons to the withdrawal agreement. But if he's not willing to deal with that at all, if he's not willing to have the backstop in the withdrawal agreement, then I can't see a fix, no, because there is no way the backstop is being removed from the withdrawal agreement.
You mentioned that some figures in the EU remember Boris Johnson's Telegraph days as a Brussels correspondent. I mean, that was quite a long time ago, the 1990s, when he was writing about bendy bananas and so on. There's actually a new team coming in, and Ursula von der Leyen is going to be at the head of it. Just tell us about her.
Well, she went to the same school as Boris, the European school in Ukla. In terms of her kind of first press appearances, also she didn't massively impress.
Before I was in the game, it was also difficult to find a stable platform majority.
We're used to the Brussels press pack is used to sort of gaffes and japes with Jean-Claude Juncker, but she's very controlled. But she will be significant because she'll be the one dealing with a no deal, or she'll be dealing with the negotiation after the 31st of October. Ultimately, though, the Commission President takes their mandate from the Member States.
Rowena, the EU have read a lot into that vote of MPs last week to prevent Boris Johnson suspending Parliament. But that in itself doesn't stop no deal. It just allows the House of Commons to keep sitting. It does show that there's probably a majority who want to stop no deal, which is the legal default. What mechanisms could they use to try to prevent it?
What the Conservative rebels and other cross-party rebels will try to do is seize on any kind of legislation that's going through Parliament in order to tack on amendments that would stop a no-deal Brexit. We've seen so far that John Bercow, the Speaker, is willing to bend precedent a little bit in order to help out the rebels who want to stop a no-deal Brexit. I think that there will be ways to do that, but what Boris Johnson's got is at the moment is control of the order paper, parliamentary business. So on his side, the government's going to be working very hard to try and shut down those possibilities for legislative tweaks to stop a no-deal Brexit. So what you'll end up with is a big parliamentary battle going through the autumn. Everything's kind of hurtling towards this exit day of October the 31st very quickly. So the rebels have really got to be organised and got that to get their act together if they want to find some way to stop a no-deal Brexit very, very quickly.
Are they cancelling their summer holidays?
It doesn't look like they are so far, no. And I think Conservative backbenchers are going to give Boris Johnson a chance to change his mind, to change direction and really make an effort to strike a deal with Brussels. And
but Boris Johnson's not going to go on holiday, is he?
I wouldn't put it past him.
If Parliament tries and fails to find any mechanism to stop no deal under this government, the next stage could be a confidence vote in Boris Johnson's government. And we know that senior figures, including Hammond, have not ruled out the possibility, even though it would ruin their own careers, of voting with Labour against the government. If a confidence vote is lost, what happens next?
If Boris Johnson loses a confidence vote, then there'd be 14 days for MPs as a whole to get together and see if they could form a government that commanded the majority of support in the House. So in that situation, you could see some of the parties try to form some sort of unity government to either pursue a pro-second referendum policy or pass Theresa May's withdrawal agreement with a second referendum tacked on the end of it. If that sort of coalition can't be thrashed out, then there'd be a general election triggered and you'd see Boris Johnson going into that with a strongly pro-Brexit, possibly pro-no-deal policy. And at that point, with the threat of the Brexit Party so high, he might have to do some sort of non-aggression pact with Nigel Farage in order for Conservative MPs not to lose their seats.
So what, could he end up as Deputy Prime Minister in a Boris Johnson government with a majority?
I mean, the Brexit Party's been riding incredibly high in the polls at the moment, so we definitely can't discount the idea that Nigel Farage could enter Parliament on his, what, 7th, 8th or 10th?
Look, you know, I've said all the way through this, if Boris wants to have a fight with me, then someone hold my jacket. That's fine. You know, I'll have a punch-up with him any day you like. But if he does that, if he chooses to see me as a political enemy, he can't win. So it's up to him.
Is there any chance that Johnson will do the opposite of what he said and actually call an election himself?
I think that's a pretty high possibility, yes. I think his team is certainly preparing for that. He said it would be a terrible idea to hold an election before Brexit's actually done.
Mr. Johnson, you'll rule out a general election before Brexit is delivered?
Absolutely. I think, as I've just said, I think it would be the height of folly.
But if all other routes are closed off to him, if Europe won't budge and Parliament won't allow a no deal, then there's really no other option. With a wafer-thin majority of just three MPs, a general election is going to happen sometime in the next year anyway.
Daniel, what is the view from the EU? I don't know if they've gamed this far ahead, but do they think about the possibility of either a Boris Johnson-led government with a majority, maybe with Nigel Farage as deputy PM, or of a Labour-led government? And what do they think happens under those scenarios?
So to a certain extent, they have been gaming kind of the idea of a Labour government, a Jeremy Corbyn-led government, because we've had Keir Starmer, the shadow Brexit secretary, over an awful lot in the last 6 months to a year, discussing his position in Parliament, but also discussing his position generally if there was a Labour government. And to a certain extent, you know, the EU and Labour have been working together on looking what's fathomable. In terms of a Boris Johnson majority or something, a Boris Johnson, Nigel Farage panto horse, it sounds absolutely terrifying, and I don't think they would even countenance it. But how does it affect the fundamentals? I mean, Donald Tusk put it quite well at the last European Council, the last EU Leaders Summit.
Maybe the process of Brexit will be even more exciting than before because of some personal decisions in London, but nothing has changed when it comes to our position.
So, yes, Boris Johnson, Nigel Farage, government, very exciting, I'm sure. But what's it changing the fundamentals? I think it just means we have a no deal, don't we?
You talk about the EU bending over to protect its own member island over the backstop. But if there's a no deal outcome, that would be catastrophic for the economy of Ireland. Is there a chance that the EU could blink at the last minute?
The political stars are currently aligned so that in Dublin, the backstop is absolutely sacrosanct. And at the moment, you can't see possibly how it would disappear. But if we, at an absolute certain no deal in a sort of 6 months hence, we had a general election and we'd had this Boris Johnson Nigel Farage thing, then of course the thinking would be had. I mean, it's a new reality.
And can I just ask you, as a kind of observer of British politicians arriving in Brussels, I get the impression that they're not mad keen on Nigel Farage. How do you think Boris Johnson will fit in? I mean, it's always seemed a bit awkward when Theresa May is there trying to kind of chat to other world leaders. Do you think he'll be a bit more comfortable?
Boris Johnson has had a heap of abuse from senior figures in the EU. But once you become the Prime Minister of the United Kingdom, then you immediately have authority. You won't get that. People will listen to him. And as a character, he is quite personable. I mean, look at the way the EU treats people like Viktor Orban. I mean, this guy, Viktor Orban, runs an authoritarian government, and he gets hugs from Jean-Claude Juncker all the time. I'm sure he'll fit in fine in terms of personality.
And Rowena, we understand that Ollie Robbins, the kind of civil servant who's been leading the Brexit negotiations, is on his way out. Who would Boris Johnson like to send over?
There's some talk that he wants this to be a political appointment, the chief negotiator. So somebody
himself.
Possibly. I think everything we know about Boris Johnson is that he prefers to delegate. I'd say it's a strong possibility Stephen Barclay, the current Brexit secretary, could carry on. He's very across all the details. Some would like, on the Eurosceptic right, would like Dominic Raab to come back. He's a former Brexit secretary and a lawyer who's, again, a details man. Another name that's been mooted is Geoffrey Cox, who's the Attorney General. He's
the lion-like.
He's got a very deep, booming voice and he's quite a commanding presence.
And it is time they grew up and got real!
It sounds as if we could be headed towards no deal. And Philip Hammond has talked previously about a kind of bad-tempered no deal if negotiations completely break down. Is there any way to soften the blow? Is there any situation in which we have no deal, but we do things to try and help either side out.
There already are plans, contingency plans, which will soften the blow to a certain extent. So for example, they're going to allow flights between the UK and the EU, and under EU law, that wouldn't necessarily be the case. They allow sort of 5%, I think, of the total road haulage permits that we currently have to be submitted. They're going to do certain bits on customs. They've got a series of contingency measures which will last for 9 months, which will essentially just keep basic connectiveness between the UK and the EU going, and they'll keep the City of London operating as a place where the EU markets can get money, but for a temporary period. And all these contingency measures are purely for EU interests and not for the UK's interests. So the EU have devised a series of things they're going to do to protect themselves, but they're temporary. And there's no real cooperation with the UK on them. I can see them going so far, and they'll probably go further than they have gone now. Let's be honest, in reality, when things are really hitting the fan and the sort of the European demos is saying, oh my God, our business is going crunch, you've got to do something about it. Of course, there'll be pressure on the European side to have open talks on various things. But I don't think it's not going to be the comprehensive thing that was in the withdrawal agreement, and it's not going to shield the British economy from the massive hit that it will have.
And they're not going to do anything to protect British citizens in the EU.
Each member state has come up with their own ideas in terms of how they're going to protect British citizens. You know, some are more generous than others. So the people will get some rights, but they won't get the full panoply of rights that's in the withdrawal agreement.
And when we're in that no-deal scenario, would they all still be then working towards a free trade agreement in the future?
If there's a no-deal scenario, the EU will say, we're willing to re-engage in talks on a free trade deal once you've satisfied us on these obligations. That is, citizens' rights, the Irish border, and the money, the divorce bill, the £39 billion.
It sounds as if, Rowena, when Boris Johnson says there's a million to one chance of no deal.
That we need. I don't think that's where we're going to end up. I think it's a million to one against, but it is vital that we prepare.
He's talking absolute rubbish. Is that a fair assessment?
Well, the Brexit Secretary, Steve Barclay, who supports Boris Johnson for the leadership, has said that no deal is underpriced. It's much more likely than that.
I said earlier, Mr. Ogley, I think a no deal is underpriced. It's still this government's intention and both leadership candidates' intention to seek a deal.
Jeremy Hunt, Boris Johnson's leadership rival, who's a softer Brexiteer, says that no deal is much more likely than that. So it probably is the truth that is a bit of kind of throwaway rhetoric from Boris Johnson. You know, at other times he's sounded far more serious about the prospect of no deal. And certainly the noises from his campaign is that one of his first acts as Prime Minister is going to be to seriously ramp up no deal planning.
We will encourage people in a very positive way.
From the moment you're there, the campaign will start.
From the get-go, right. We start saying, look, what do you need? What help do you need? What reassurances do you need? Right.
Agriculture. So he wants to show Brussels that the threat is there, that he really is prepared to do this.
Daniel, do you think no deal is underpriced? And do you think we're increasingly looking at either no deal or no Brexit?
But for me, it's a general election. I think Parliament will stop a no deal, and I think Johnson will be forced to call a general election.
Daniel, Rowena, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
That was our deputy political editor, Rowena Mason, and our Brussels bureau chief, Daniel Boffey. They and their Westminster and Brussels colleagues are all over this story, so do follow them on the website and do have a look at Andrew Sparrow's brilliant Politics Live blog. Coming up, what makes you laugh?
I'm Emma John, and I'm sorry. I lied to you.
It's the spin!
I said we'd be happy if England won the World Cup, but lost the Ashes. It's not true. I want it all. I know it's greedy, but positioning the urn next to the World Cup on Ben Stokes' mantelpiece would make this the ultimate summer for English cricket. So join us on the spin as we turn ourselves into emotional wrecks all over again. It couldn't be as nerve-wracking as the World Cup final. Could it?
It's the spin!
The Spin is supported by NatWest.
Now, TV critic Rebecca Nicholson on whether things are funnier when others are laughing too.
So as a TV critic, I'm very used to watching television by myself. I generally sit there in front of a laptop with headphones on and never have the experience of watching TV with other people. So when I see a show with canned laughter or a laugh track, it feels quite strange. It's odd to watch something like that by yourself because you feel as if you're being told when the right moment to laugh is. You're being told the joke's finished, now you may laugh. The Office showed us that a laugh track really wasn't necessary. It was a mockumentary style format and it wouldn't have suited a laugh track. And since then, I think most of the best comedies haven't had a laugh track. 30 Rock, even though it's very silly and very gag heavy, doesn't have a laugh track where you think that it would need one. And part of that, I think, is that comedy and drama are meeting in the middle now, and a laugh track would be very strange over something like Fleabag.
What's that in your hand?
She doesn't need to tell you.
Birthday present from Dad.
It's a good thing, Claire.
Chunk of change?
No, it's.
What is it?
Dinner?
You don't need to.
Low present, a never good present.
It's because you might.
It's a voucher for a counselling session. Thanks, Dad.
But a new study in Current Biology has suggested that the laugh track is actually an effective device in terms of making us like a joke more. So they spoke to 72 people. They told them what they've described as dad jokes, which I heartily approve of. I love a dad joke. And they played them these jokes with canned laughter. And what they found is that people laughed more when they heard other people laughing, which I think is a given anyway. I think we've all had experiences where we've caught someone's eye who is laughing in like a meeting or something. The first thing you want to do, it's like yawning, is you want to laugh with them. The manipulative power of the laugh track, I think, can be seen in, there's a whole load of internet rabbit holes that you can go down where people have taken laugh tracks off clips of shows like Friends and The Big Bang Theory. And you're left with this kind of weird skeleton of a show. The script is really strange. The gaps were all left for people to, for the live audience to laugh in. So you have this really weird pacing. The jokes aren't funny. Some of it really has a sinister flavour to it. And then on the flip side of that, people have put laugh tracks onto things that shouldn't have them, like The Shining.
Here's Johnny!
It's very, very weird. You're not really sure how you're supposed to feel about it. I don't think it's any coincidence that some of the most popular sitcoms of the last two or three decades have all had laugh tracks on. And I'm talking about the massive breakout ones. And I think that that's because of the communal experience of it. I really do think it's because you tend to watch that sort of thing with other people. And we don't really do that anymore. We tend to watch television when we want to, choosing the programme that we want to. But there's something about that kind of experience of all laughing contagiously together that's really joyful.
That was Rebecca Nicholson. My thanks to her and to Rowena Mason and Daniel Boffey. Today, we took a look at the difficulties facing the Conservative Party under its new leader, Boris Johnson. And tomorrow, on the final day that Parliament sits before the summer, we will look at the opposition and Jeremy Corbyn's challenges as Labour leader with so much division in the party. This episode was produced by Rachel Humphreys, Courtney Youssef and Rosie Gillett. Sound design was by Axel Cucoutier. The executive producers are Phil Maynard and Nicole Jackson. See you tomorrow.